I'm Madeline Wallace.
And I'm Henry Lin.
And welcome to Better World.
Better World is an exploration of badass people doing really cool things. The more we know about this world, the better we can do in changing it.
And here, today, we have the wonderful, amazing... Want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Indre Rockefeller, and I am the co-founder...
Rap lyrics, y'all.
...of Paravel.
Woo!
Are you sure you're not a hip-hop artist with that name? Because that name is fire.
I think we established that that is going to be my backup plan.
Right. Here. Okay. Henry will not drop that.
Is that a Burberry jacket that you're wearing with your leather loafers?
Because it is not. You know, this is actually a blazer that has been, it's a vintage blazer that has been upcycled from menswear blazers, and they cut it for women.
Right. So eco mom rather than hip hop artist, but yeah. I'm still going to push hip hop artist was my point there.
Right. Okay. I'll take it.
Oh my God.
I wish we had memes of the eye rolls that you give me.
So many. Like, what are you wearing, Henry? Let's talk about that.
First off, we both know if this is a stripping contest, I'll get there. Oh, but you forgot to introduce...
Brendan!
What's good, yeah?
Our dude.
Our guy. Here to just keep the energy neutral.
Our better man.
Literally.
We need it.
Everyone take a deep breath.
Are we having a little namaste?
Thank you.
A little cyclical breathing, everyone? In through the nose, out through
the
mouth?
Actually, cyclical breathing is something I have not mastered, so...
I think it's something I need to learn about.
Yeah.
Look up Yoga with Adrian on YouTube. I know nothing about yoga, but in this new decade, I'm trying to be healthy.
But you too about Adrian?
That's exciting. Yes. Okay, and let's talk about...
4.3 billion facts. People were scheduled to travel via air... according to the ICAO's preliminary compilation in 2018. 4.3 billion people. That's a lot of traveling people and a lot of air.
People.
How do they get their shit from one place to the next?
Probably a bunch of really unsustainable luggage pieces.
I mean, I'm going to go with that.
That is actually the truth for the most part.
A lot of plastic bags.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah. And we're here to help solve that.
Yes. We need that.
So, yeah.
Thank you.
I am happy to tell you more about that.
Tell us a little bit about the company.
So Paravel is a direct-to-consumer sustainable travel brand. We sell travel goods as a system of travel, and we really are looking to help people just make better choices when they travel.
Why is it sustainable?
So we have recently revamped our supply chain to make the raw materials out of things like plastic water bottles and upcycled materials. We have duffel bags that are made from 22 recycled plastic water bottles. We have luggage that is made from recycled polycarbonate, recycled aircraft grade aluminum. It has recycled zippers. The lining is made from 15 recycled plastic water bottles. So it really is about rethinking what materials go into travel goods and not sacrificing quality, design, or price while we're doing it.
Why did you guys elect to go with recycled plastic? I mean, the upcycling is great. Congratulations on the sustainability. All awesome. And granted, you know, there's, what was it, like 150 million tons that Malaysia is shipping back to us. So there's no shortage of plastic that
so we have nothing to point. Do with it. There is no, there's a lot of plastic that is being created. And exactly. It is about taking plastic that is destined for landfills and finding a better and higher use for it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And people want product when they're traveling to get them from point A to point B. It needs to be functional. It needs to be resilient. They want it to look good, but it doesn't have to be made out of virgin plastic. It can be made out of the plastic that has already been created in this world.
So even if, you know, the petrochemical industry were shut down tomorrow and we were able to completely transition away from plastics, we'd still be sitting on, you know, a few billion tons, right? And
that's
we would still have to do something with it is the thesis.
That's right.
Okay. So that's awesome.
That's amazing. And
that's
also
great.
I heard you say you transitioned your supply chain. So what was that like and how did you figure that one out?
So I'll tell you the story of what really the impetus behind it was sort of emotionally.
Yeah.
Supply chains are an emotional decision.
Turns out they are. And it's something that is not easy to do as a fast growing company, but it was something that became imperative to us. And it started about a year and a half ago. I went on a trip to Antarctica with the Nature Conservancy on a polar expedition, and it was the most transformative trip of my life. I'll never forget that moment where we sort of were going through the Drake Passage, crazy 25-foot waves in the morning. We wake up, it's like 5 o'clock in the morning, open the shades, and it just looks like we are on the moon. Mm-hmm. It is an otherworldly place. It's so pristine. I've never been somewhere where there is no tangible human footprint. There's no evidence of human life. Uh-huh. And yet, being with these scientists on board, with climate scientists, with glaciologists, with marine biologists, you start seeing the intangible effects of the human footprint.
Yeah.
And feeling that and seeing that, and then recognizing that we were building a business that depends on our planet as part of our business model to send people out into the world to explore it, and deciding that we absolutely needed to be part of the conversation and part of the search for a solution to make sure that there is a world explorer for future generations, because we want people to be experiencing different cultures and seeing different parts of the world. We want people connecting to nature, to each other, but we can do that in a better way.
That's amazing. First of all, thank you so much. I also don't think many people can relate, but I actually did plastic research in the Arctic a couple years ago.
Five gyres,
shout out. And it was the same thing, like islands that had never been inhabited by humans, and us picking up so much plastic and, you know, analyzing the samples and realizing that it was everywhere was really shocking. So yeah, I totally support that. And I actually empathize, which I don't think is like a, yeah.
Right.
It's rare to find such pristine and be able to be around such pristine nature nowadays. So after you made the realization, you were like, let's do a 180. Like, we need to get on board with sustainability and be part of that conversation. How, I mean, without getting into too much detail, because I know that there's a certain level of technical, you know, stuff that we don't necessarily have to cover, but like, what did it look like? Because you are an exemplar of a company that started out not necessarily having these values as the forefront of your production, and having to do a 180. And I know that that's a really big struggle for a lot of companies.
Yeah.
So, what were some of the challenges behind that?
So it's interesting because I had always, my co-founder and I both always felt sustainability was something that was personally important to us and that we practiced in our day-to-day lives as human beings. Mm-hmm. And as a business, it was something that was a goal from the outset, but it felt like such a big challenge and such a big word that encompasses so many elements for different people. Mm-hmm. There's the people element, there's the environmental element of sustainability, there's the animal impact. And as a business, we also wanted to provide high quality product that was functional, that was beautifully designed, that helped people travel happy. So the sustainability thing, really that trip to Antarctica was about reprioritization and bumping that up and saying, you know what, it may delay the launch of something. We had been working on our wheeled luggage, for example, that just launched a few months ago, and we stopped the project and we started from scratch.
Wow.
And it was something that in our business plan had been something that we were going to launch a year ago. But we said, you know what, we have to do this the right way.
That's amazing.
And this is not this is not something that we want to greenwash or do halfway or say, you know, we didn't do it with integrity, that we can't look at ourselves in the mirror and say we did everything we could to make this bag as sustainable as possible. So there were sacrifices from a timeline perspective, from a budget perspective, from, you know, looking at our margin structure, looking at our factories and our suppliers and needing to redo almost all of that. But it wasn't something that any of us questioned once we started going down that path. Mm-hmm. And it was actually something that the whole team got really excited about. And it ended up building so much energy within our team that it was really empowering to see that we were able to do something that seemed so unattainable just by reprioritizing it.
Yeah.
And it meant certain things didn't get launched that were in the pipeline, or it meant certain, you know, delays and expenses. But
yeah,
I think that our customers, when that bag came out, understood just how much work had gone into it and appreciated that it had been sort of built soup to nuts to be sustainable, not retrofitted. And then there were products that we, like our fold-up bags that are made from negative nylon now, which is these recycled plastic water bottles. We had been selling those. They had been made out of nylon. They were really, they were selling extremely well. And we wanted to be able to keep the quality, keep the resilience, make they still had to fold down onto themselves and zip up into these little pouches. So it took time for us to source material that was equal in all those elements to it. But we were able to do a like-for-like transition and keep the price the same, which was really important to us.
Wow. That's outstanding.
That is really.
We are going to take our first commercial break. Better Worlds is brought to you by Surf City El Salvador. The El Salvadorian government has invested in some of the coastal regions, trying to make it the next Nicaragua or Costa Rica. Hopefully not the next Nicaragua with what they're going on politically, but Surf City. Take a look at El Zonte, in particular, one of our favorite spots, and the Palo Verde Hotel. PaloVerdeHotel.com or Palo Verde Hotel on the Instagram. Surf City is an initiative which is also going to be the host of some summits by Better World. We are having an eco summit down there in the fall, and we will be discussing regenerative farming, agroforestry, and ecotourism, and how all of those work hand in hand together. So, take a look at the region. Costa Rica isn't the only one innovating in the environmental and ecotourist field. Surf City. And we are back from that wonderful pre-recorded statement. God, I love our messages. They're really just tremendous. And we're talking about luggage. And we're talking about a class of products that is normally made with polyester nylon or polypropylene, some version of really durable plastic. And oh my God, there is so much plastic.
So much.
So much plastic. So I would love to hear a little bit about your background and how you guys got here before asking you a little bit about the differentiators of the business. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to grow up outside of Detroit as a rapper?
Oh my God.
Oh, so
Is it like the movie 8 Mile?
This is where I was going. Thank you.
Yes. I think by the end of this episode, you will have me rapping, and that's not a good thing. So let's try to avoid that.
Spaghetti. Let's go.
That's the goal.
So I grew up in D.C., which is the next worst. Best
thing. Me too.
Really?
Yeah, nice. We're just outside. Nice. Like Virginia side.
Okay. Great. Great place to grow up.
It's like a Tyson's Corner guy over here.
Nice.
Oh, hey. Oh, there
thank
we
you.
Go. Shout anyway, out Tyson's
Corner. Anyway, she grew up in D.C., people.
And you know,
not
my...
all of us can be from the moon, unicorn guy.
I'm pretty sure everybody here is from the moon. Okay. Anyway.
Moving on.
My first passion and first love was ballet. I grew up dancing ballet. I was very seriously training all through high school and ended up deferring college to dance ballet professionally. And I danced with the Washington Ballet, then I danced with the Finnish National Ballet, and later in my career, Le Grand Ballet Canadien and some companies in the New York area.
Oh, of course, sure. Sustainable ballerina.
Casual.
Right. Sustainable ballerina, yeah. So, but I bring that up partly because you asked me for my background, and that is such a formative part of my background, but also because I have...
I'm flexing my unicorn credentials.
For as long as I've known, been driven, a passion-driven person. I have followed things that I love, things that I believe in, things that drive me intrinsically. And so I think growing up doing something and having my first job be something that was a complete passion and required so much work and dedication...
And destroyed your knees.
And actually my back. It ended up being my back that took me out in the end. But I always had, and it was partly my parents that instilled that freedom and partly just a lot of drive to focus on something and then back it up with a lot of passion. Right. So ballet was that first introduction to it. It was my first job. It was my first love.
It was your everything.
It was my everything. And I after I went, I ended up going to college and sort of went back and forth between ballet and college, which is not a traditional path. Usually you
no,
go,
it
you,
precludes all the drugs usually, one would normally yeah, do. Exactly. You're like, I gotta fucking dance at 6 a.m. for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So I can't go do these keg stands with you.
Right. That and the fact that it's a full-time job and your college years are the formative times in your dance career.
Right.
So it's not usually split between sort of full-time education and full-time dance. So I sort of navigated those two female fields simultaneously, which created some...
And your parents were cool with this?
Yeah. They think they just didn't want me to ever blame them for decisions I'd made.
Right. Okay.
Who wants to live with that?
Because I would have told you to fucking chill.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I would have been like, bro, chill. Go have a beer. Hang out. College it.
Which I did too.
Yeah. I would have gotten you the college sweater from National Lampoon. I would have introduced you to one of my friends who resembles Jim Belushi. And I would have said, you know, like, go out there, make a bunch of bad decisions. You know, like, have a couple of hangovers.
Which I did.
Right. It still did it anyway.
I did. I broke it up. So I did Washington Ballet. Then I did my freshman year. Then I did finish National Ballet and finished up college.
Oh, you did year in, year out.
Yeah, I was sort of doing an unusual sort of, because I couldn't quite decide which path.
That sounds amazing. Ultimately gonna go down.
Yeah,
that's
so
crazy.
Having a random excursion to Helsinki between my freshman and sophomore year.
That's so sick. There was this Finnish boyfriend. His name was Sven. He was completely influential.
So you've been traveling your whole
read
life.
A lot of Kierkegaard.
Travel was important to me. My family is from Lithuania. Mm-hmm. So traveling back
Time out. What? Okay, so there's a Lithuanian side.
There's a Lithuanian
the
side.
The plot thickens, people.
Yes.
Okay, is this the immediate side? I assume this is your mother's
both
side?
Both my parents.
Both your parents?
Both my parents are Lithuanian. Yeah, that was my first language, actually, Lithuanian.
The Badass. Lithuanian Rockefellers?
That's my husband.
Oh, fail. Okay, so meanwhile, back in Lithuania.
Whatever, yeah.
No.
She's her.
We're getting her own. Yes. Into this.
She's Lithuanian. She's herself.
Everyone.
Oh my god. Okay, so what? You were traveling. You grew up. You were traveling. You'd visit your friend, your
family.
So
travel was something that, from the outset, was something that was exciting, interesting. I was traveling on my own very young. When I was dancing, we were touring all over the world.
Dancing, particularly the ballet, you know, almost like the national pastime of the entirety of that Eastern Bloc? Like the best ballerinas, you know, come from...
They really come from all over the world. It's
everywhere.
Yeah.
So there are fantastic dance programs and dancers from all over the world. So there are... but it was really, you know, for me, something that allowed me to travel and experience the world and grow up with this global mindset.
Right.
And so...
When did you have to give it up?
So after graduating from college, I had an art history degree. I had started working briefly in the art history, sort of in the art world here, and just felt this pull back to dance and still wanted to go back, wanted to experience some more of it, and was able to. So that's when I joined Le Grand Ballet Canadien in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I ended up herniating a disc severely during a rehearsal. And that led to just a series of injuries and a lot of time in physical therapy. And it changed my relationship with my job because I wasn't able to do what I loved. I was mostly in physical therapy.
And in physical therapy.
And I ended up, one thing led to another, and I ended up in the fashion industry.
As
one does. And I really think it was about jumping from one thing that was sort of all-encompassing and passion-driven into another. It had always been an industry that fascinated me. I've always loved design. Even in ballet, I think my first interest in sort of clothing design came from the costume department in ballet. Like, I would love going to fittings and the costume atelier. These women were making these costumes by hand. It was the most sort of artisanal practice and sort of passed down generation to generation, and these beautiful materials. And so that was sort of a natural progression for me and another arena that I felt passionate about. And so I ended up going from one job and profession that was all-encompassing and passion-driven to another. And that sort of has continued. And it was really from a career in the fashion industry where, again, I was on the road all the time, traveling for fashion weeks, for meetings, for store openings. I had worked on the sort of editorial and the retail and the brand side of the industry. And just being on the road all the time became aware that there was just no travel product that I was passionate about. It felt like it was always about the least worst option.
Right, always.
And putting together things. And yet, everyone around me was traveling all the time. The experience economy was booming. People loved travel, but no one loved their travel bags.
Mm-hmm.
And
I had a brief romance with Gurkha.
Okay.
Yeah. It was very brief, though.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for that.
I mean, like, it lasted, like, 4 or 5 years. In fact, it's one of my longer-standing relationships, let's be honest. But still, I feel like until, the most recent spat of companies came along, we didn't really focus on it, and we settled for a lot of garbage.
Yeah. I think, in general, there's been two extremes, traditionally, in the luggage space. There have been sort of the luxury goods that outprice a lot of consumers. And then there have been commoditized goods that don't drive a lot of passion for the consumer. So they become a means to an end.
Yeah. Right.
And a lot of times it's a disposable means to an end.
Yeah.
And it's not made with integrity, and it's not made with materials that stand the test of time or designs that stand the test of time. And you had this big white space in between. And really that was just looking at it from a market. It just seemed like, as someone who was on the road all the time and wanted to be making better choices, there was no company that was allowing me to do that systematically. Maybe it was like something from here, something from there, but I wasn't getting my, wheeled luggage and my duffel bag and my tote bag and my packing solutions and my cosmetics case and my handbag all from the same company and wasn't particularly passionate about a lot of them. And so it really came from this desire to create travel goods that offered better choices to the consumer. And
your stuff's also cute. It's very well designed.
Thank you.
I'm not just an asshole. I'm only mostly.
Yeah, you are. DVD. We still have some time left
today,
on them.
I don't know. Testing me over here.
Oh, my shorts.
Anyway. Wow.
So where did the design element come in for you guys? You just decided that, we have to make something more functional, more passionate, that something loved, but was your fashion job part of your design training? Was this important to you?
Yes, the design element was very important to me. And I, aside from being sort of the co-founder, I took on the creative director role.
Mm-hmm.
It really, for me, overseeing the design was something that was important to me. And I have to feel for any bag of ours to be released into the world, I have to feel passionate about it. We go through multiple iterations and prototypes, and from the sketch phase to the production phase is a lot of sort of design steps. And for me, it's really important that every piece is thoughtfully designed, not just that it's quote unquote cute,
right.
which I appreciate, but it also has, like, where are the pockets? How lightweight is it? What am I going to pair it with? Does it slide over the handles of my wheeled luggage? Is it something that fits my computer? Things like that working together so that you don't have, so the consumer doesn't have to do the work in terms of thinking of what pairs with what. You just have a go-to system and you fill it as you see fit.
A system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we're talking about functionally things like, how do I segment my gym clothes or bathing suits that I've already worn?
I've got packing cubes for you for that.
You got packing cubes.
They're made out of recycled plastic water bottles.
So you'd say the process has a lot of baggage.
Oh, God. Anyway.
Well, I have used that line before. We got baggage.
Yeah. I mean, so it's because it's like, why wouldn't we optimize our travel functionality?
Yeah.
And for someone who's been traveling since I was like 8 as well, I've always just been throwing bags together, and it's like, oh, now my tote is going over my rolly bag, but it just fell because it doesn't fit.
Right.
And I feel like we all relate. But so you stepped in.
Yeah, and I think for so many people, travel bags were the things that they experienced in storage units
or
airport carousels. And it was just a functional piece that took you from point A to point B, but not something you felt passionate about. And we did a lot of talking to people before launching this brand, and we couldn't get someone to tell us a product in the travel, in the pure play travel goods space that they felt passionate about, that they were willing to go to bat for. It was like always the least worst thing. Mm-hmm.
This passion is one of your differentiators, clearly, as is design. Can you tell us a little bit more about what differentiates the product?
So obviously there's the, I mean, the sustainability element we've spoken about, but there really isn't a lot of conversation happening in the travel goods space around sustainable manufacturing, which I find surprising just because...
And or sustainable travel.
We have taken steps as a company, not just in our materials, but in our actions to be a sustainable company. So we offset the carbon emissions of our team whenever they travel. Mm-hmm. And we obviously redid our supply chain to reflect that. We encourage our partners to be sustainable. We have a code of sort of behavior that we expect from our any sort of suppliers or factories to abide by. And so there are a number of elements outside of just the pure materials that we think of as being part of what makes us a sustainable company.
Right. So the, you know, big elephant in the room and $1 million question, why do you consider your product superior then, or why should somebody choose your product without using the word superior? Because I just felt Maddie, it lasered me. Thank God I don't have a shock collar.
Oh my God.
It would be exhausting. Why choose you guys over any other? What's the...
If you're not already sold, because I don't know why you wouldn't be.
Not already sold.
But. So, listen, I think that there are...
I mean, just a review to prove to Maddie that I was paying attention. Intelligent design. So you guys have created systems around the way people travel and have thought through a number of the different use cases that are most common and satisfied the consumer. Beautiful design. So aesthetically, you're very passionate about it, and you created something fundamentally beautiful that people will like to carry and be associated with, giving homage to the fact that for whatever reason, one day long ago, in a time that was long gone, they had, you know, beautiful luggage with little L's and little V's on them. Like, I get it. Almost. And then completely sustainable products. So something which is thoughtfully built and made with the planet in mind, and buying from a company which is thoughtful about how things are produced and your subsequent impact. So you guys, so we would be supporting yet another company that is reducing their impact, not creating more, but, you know, upcycling, creating less. So outside of those main things, you know, like, is there another real, you know, differentiator, reason, feeling, sale that you would note for the consumer? Is the price point more?
So first of all, you're hired.
Thank you.
I'd love to on you on our marketing team.
See that, Maddie? She called me handsome.
There you go. That's how men think.
That is the last time you're going to interrupt this woman.
So you actually hit a lot of the legs of the stool. We look at our, it's like a four-legged stool: quality, design, price, and sustainability.
Right.
So historically, in travel goods, even if you took away the sustainability element, our thesis is...
Which is one of the most important.
Which is one of the most important. But even aside from that, if you were to hold the other three categories up, our thesis is that you have to sacrifice at least one of the other legs of the stool to get the other two. You know, you can get great function and design, but the price... You know, right. Or you can get price and functionality, but the design often suffers. And then once, and but we really wanted to make sure that all those were strong elements. Right. And then when we layered sustainability in, it was really important to us that there were, we were not asking the consumer to make sacrifices. Right. We're not telling you
or that, pay premiums.
Or pay, right. And that's right. That's one of them, right? We're not saying that you're going to have to pay. It's more expensive for you. We're not saying that you have to wheel around a hemp bag that doesn't function, you know, because it's sustainable. You know, you have this. No, I'm all into hemp, just not for wheeled luggage, hard-sided wheeled luggage. But I think that there is still a bit of a consumer hesitation around sustainability, partly because the word is so overused and it's confusing.
Right, totally.
But also because you assume that there is a sacrifice attached, either on the price tag or on the design element or on the quality, something will give. And it was so important for us to start this conversation, at least in our vertical, in sort of travel bags, saying you don't have to. It is just about the company trying harder.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're so not laying it on to, yes. With- yes, absolutely. So we have, and that pricing is something we fight for every day because we really believe that's part of what, where we position ourselves right. is to not be in the luxury price space. Because that is what gives more consumers the opportunity to make better choices. But, you know, that, that training to the consumer, we think, can have larger ripple effects of saying, here's one space where you don't have to make sacrifices, but that's across the board. We have now enough, you know, development that's happened in sustainable materials and in technology and in the conversations that are happening that
sustainable materials, not just upcycled materials. You guys did look at biopolymers, for example.
There's a lot of materials that we're looking at right now that are still being developed, right. you know, that yep. we're excited about. Some we can get our hands on, some we can't yet
right.
yeah. because they're not out yet or they're limited to certain companies, right, but it's really yet, right. exciting. And even from the moment when we started building this company in the 3 years ago or before that, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we started developing the product before launch, the amount of opportunities and options have just exploded. And that is so exciting. And now it's about taking those, it's up, the onus is on companies to allow to pass on those better choices right. to the consumer. And I do see a lot of travel goods companies who are afraid to walk into the conversation. And I think that it is partly a fear of you're not 100%, so afraid to have accountability where it's imperfect. And for right. us, we intentionally walked into it being like, we're not done. This is step one, but we want to have an honest conversation with our consumer and be like, this is where we started. These are the first bags that we did. Here are other things that we're doing. We have there's a long list of things that we are working on and before that I want to be done tomorrow that won't be done
right.
for another year
but
or two.
But it's buy from us because we're always fucking innovating.
Yes, and we're honest and we're having a conversation with you and we're not trying to sell you something that isn't, you know, sustainable, that is like as sustainable when it isn't, and we're not trying to greenwash a product and saying it's sustainable when it actually is. So it's really for us about saying, let's have an open dialogue. I think that is something that companies need to have with their consumer. And even if they say, we're not perfect, but this is the journey we're on and you're on it with us. So right. let's have a conversation.
I think this is really, really awesome and am incredibly moved by the passion that you have for continuing to figure out how you can make a better product and not resting on your laurels after having done something.
Yeah, and I will interrupt to say that is another area where ballet really shaped, I think, my entrepreneurial path.
Right,
because as a dancer, you're never done. It's right. never perfect. There's no such thing as like, I mastered that. You come back to the studio every morning and you start from scratch. And you start from the beginning, you take a class, even as a professional, you take a ballet class. That's how your day starts. So by even the vocabulary, you're a student of your own art form, mm-hmm. and you are constantly working towards something. And there is not, even the most prestigious dancer when they're retiring is never done with their work. And I think the same applies to entrepreneurship. And when you're building product and you're designing anything, you can always improve on it. You can always perfect. You can always, I look at bags and just today I walked up to our production person of a bag that we've already launched. I'm like, oh, I had another idea on this for like the next batch of production.
Or does what it involve about this? A campaign with you in a tutu? First position. That would be fire.
Maybe you in a tutu.
That would be so dope. Both of us in tutus.
Henry's dream.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to take our last commercial break before I get fully inappropriate. What, you can get more inappropriate than that? There we are.
Where are you going from tutus? Right? Tutus are innocent, man.
Whole new world. Oh my god. This episode of Better World is giving a very, very special shout out, as we are focused on luggage and travel, two aviators, aviation companies, that are doing some really, really great sustainable work. JetBlue and a small low-cost airline named Volaris. JetBlue has switched 80% of its fuel to more efficient fuel and committed to carbon neutrality by the year 2030. And of course, we encourage everybody to get there sooner and faster, but shout out to you guys for doing everything you can. And to Volaris, one of the first airlines to adopt a carbon offsetting program within the ticket purchase. That's right. If you fly on Volaris, you can offset all of your travel. You can also offset all of your travel by heading to our website and paying off your carbon debt. We will use your funds to plant trees, supporting agroforestry farmers who were formerly planting cows and soys.
Planting cows.
You got to plant those cows. They grow out of the ground.
Yeah, it's true.
If only. If only.
I mean, everything grows out of the ground to an extent.
Thank you, Brent.
You know.
Up here comes the next bus that Maddie's going to throw me under. What? It's a pre-recorded commercial. We'll totally edit this out.
Okay. You're like, I have no words.
I know, I'm just driving you nuts
fine.
Today.
Yeah.
You're taking your own Uber to the event.
Oh, right.
JetBlue and Volaris, we salute you guys. Keep flying. And we're back. And I would love to talk a little bit in closing about what you're going to do for the future and how you think the industry can be more sustainable as a whole. It feels like we're two steps away from you calling out some of the other folks and saying like, hey, let's all switch to better materials and let's all think about offsetting some of our emissions and be better examples and, you know, lean into some of the airlines to be better too. But, you know, tell me, what's your crusade?
Yeah, I think as a company, we're not focused on calling out other people. We're focused on what we can do to set an example. Even as a small company, you know, we're a startup, we're small, but I think that some of my small companies can have loud voices and have more impact than we think we can. So that's really right. The goal is to set sort of a conversation starter, mm-hmm, if mm-hmm. you will. But, you know, as we look to the future, one thing that was one of the most important takeaways for me from the Antarctica trip, I remember the scientists on board saying the next 10 years are the most important for the next 10,000 when it comes to climate change.
Right.
And we're in this moment. We're right. in this 10 years. And I, you know, you think of future generations looking back and thinking, what did you do when you were still in that window?
Right.
And so I apply that. I ask myself that question almost on a daily basis as a business owner and as an individual. And a lot of it is self-educating and sharing and communicating with others. And sort of as a business offering better choices, but also pushing ourselves to never stop and never rest on our laurels and never assume that we've sort of it's good enough.
Right.
Because I think, you know, it's so cyclical when our, as sort of a business, as we grow, our demand grows, that can change behaviors in suppliers. I remember when we were building our wheeled luggage and we were asking for recycled aluminum and we ended up with this amazing aircraft grade recycled aluminum. But at first our factories were saying, our suppliers were like, no, we have virgin aluminum for you. Why would you want the recycled? We've got the real
right.
deal. We're like, no, this is something
this
we
is
want.
The real
right.
deal.
This is the real deal. Yeah. And it trains, that has ripple effects.
Yes.
It trains the consumer that this is available. It trains the supplier that this is available. It trains the factory that this is available. And those are ways to get started. And it's sort of one foot in front of the other.
This is as good as, if not better.
Yeah.
Right.
And better because of the sustainable element,
right.
and just as functional and looks the same. So really that has been the driving force for how we think of tackling sustainability and being honest and being humble that, you know, we are just a small piece of the pie, but to be able to have those conversations may make somebody think about something and look at something a different way, and that can have a ripple effect. And always pushing for more.
Damn. Are you guys? Yeah. Maddie's floored.
Lord, I'm impressed.
I would like to, just as a recap, note that you've encouraged our consumers to do a couple of things before asking if you guys are planning any, you know, events, stores, pop-ups, any cool stuff like that, that where people can go and interact with Luggage Touch and, you know, go see the product. Just as the recap before we get into the where, you are encouraging, just by nature of what you guys have done, people to look at upcycling and upcycled goods as a whole, as better goods, as the new luxury. Mm-hmm. You're asking people when they travel to travel sustainably from the top to the bottom. And there are a number of tips inherent in that, whether or not it's bringing your own water bottle to offsetting some of your carbon footprint. So you guys are, you're setting a standard, which I appreciate. And you're asking others to not only maintain the standards, but be standard bearers and set it as well. So I appreciate that in your DNA. Further, it sounds like you guys are implying that you don't have to sacrifice good design and still encouraging everyone to be passionate and creative as they would like to be and express themselves as they would like to. So appreciate all of that as well. For additional resources on what you can do for sustainable travel, definitely check out betterworld.media, and hopefully we will have a blog post from a certain rapper just outside of Detroit.
Coming right up.
This joke is not going to die, people. It's the song that never ends. So I think that about covers it, but would you like to tell us whether or not there are some pop-ups or any special stuff, or do you want to just send us to the website?
Send you to tourparavel.com.
There we go. And Instagram?
Yes, at Instagram at Paravel.
Instagram at Paravel.
What was the name? Where did his name come from?
You know, it's something that just has a global ring to it. It has a lot of the letters from the word travel, but was a brand name that didn't pigeonhole us into any particular product or be too literal. And it was really about something that we felt we could build a brand that had an aspirational quality around it.
Ooh, what future products are you guys building?
I so feel that. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
We're leaving travel?
No,
just world domination.
Travel is endless. Travel's everything. It's your daily commute. It's your long haul trip. It's that wedding that weekend. It's the work trip that turns into a personal trip.
It's all subway ride.
Do you guys make like sustainable recycled plastic like horse?
Like riding gear?
Saddles.
Saddles. I mean,
traveling by horse is arguably more sustainable.
Arguably. So definitely.
Not ruling it out.
I had a horse friend who died recently.
Yep. Now we know what you ballerina unicorns talk about when I'm not around.
Anyway. Cool.
Well, guys, I, for one, have learned a tremendous amount, a Paravelian amount.
Nice.
About travel. No?
Yeah.
No. Maybe?
Hey.
Hard maybe.
I ain't a villain over here. I'm not.
Demonizing Maddie all
like
day.
100%.
All day. Anyway. We love you, Maddie.
Yeah. What is this? A unicorn who's a demon. What is this?
This demon unicorn?
It's a push-pull. Of our
It's very Miltonian. Who knows?
Anyway.
He throws an I-A-N at the end of everything. Yeah. God. Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for bringing the passion.
Thank you for tolerating Henry.
Yeah, he's rough today, this guy. I'm Henry Lynn.
I am Madeline Wallace.
And thank you for joining us on Better World. Come back next time for our wedding ceremony. It's going to be glorious.